Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Ira Shapiro, who's an international trade lawyer in Washington, D.C. He spent 12 years in the United States Senate as counsel to the majority leader and in other senior positions where he played an important role in implementing the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the Senate Code of Ethics, and the completion of the D.C. Metro rail system. During the Clinton administration, he earned the rank of ambassador, serving as the leading U.S. trade negotiator. His new book is The Last Great Senate, Courage and Statesmanship in Times of Crisis. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ira Shapiro.
It's good to be with you, Ian. Thanks for letting me come on.
And this is in terms of courage and statesmanship in times of crisis. It seems to me that you can make the case that American democracy itself is in a state of crisis. It looks like the Republicans, rather than accept their defeat in the last election, are finding all kinds of ways to get around the demographic problem that they face by gerrymandering, and they're trying at the state level to change the electoral colleges, particularly in the swing state, how the votes are counted and apportioned in a very undemocratic way. And they're also, the previous interview that we did with Aziz Huck, who served on as a clerk on the Supreme Court, about what's just happened with the D.C. Circuit Court in terms of taking away the president's ability at recess appointments. As you know, that is one of the few ways he gets around the filibuster, is being able to appoint people when the Senate is in recess, and now they've closed down that option. So it seems to me that we have a real problem here with American democracy.
Well, Ian, I think I share the view. We have a lot of problems with our democracy. Certainly, I was appalled, as you were, by the D.C. Circuit opinion on recess appointments. And I also, remain very troubled by Citizens United and the implications that that has for our system. And I agree that some of the Republicans don't seem to accept the results of elections that they don't win. But I do think the picture is a little more mixed than that. I'm seeing evidence in Washington that many of the Republicans understand the results of the election that just happened and understand that they were defeated and blamed for both extremism and obstruction. So, we can be more specific as we get into this, but I think that it's a mixed picture. The Republicans are, having lost emphatically, are struggling among themselves to figure out how to deal with it.
Well, then let's talk about how to deal with it in terms of the Senate, in terms of filibuster reform. After they made their fiscal cliff deal, Harry Reid, the majority leader, said the first thing we're going to do when we resume in the Senate, it'll happen in the first 36 hours, we'll have filibuster reform. Well, we have something, but it's certainly not what some of the younger senators wanted, like Jeff Merkley. So tell us what is in this package of reforms that Harry Reid apparently was able to make a deal with Mitch McConnell.
I think it's a modest but useful package of reforms that'll make the Senate run somewhat more smoothly, particularly in terms of bringing up legislation without filibusters on motions to proceed to take up the legislation. It also speeds up the consideration of executive branch and judicial nominations, although it doesn't foreclose filibusters there. I think several things need to be said about it. One, I would have liked to have gone farther. And I favor some of the things that Senator Merkley and Senator Udall were putting forward in terms of a talking filibuster. But the traffic wouldn't bear it. And by that I mean, despite what people said and despite what Senator Reid said, the notion of changing the Senate rules by majority, simple majority vote, as opposed to the required two-thirds, is something that people look at, they walk up to it, and they never do. It's called the nuclear option for a good reason. it's regarded as something that would really detonate the Senate. And the Democrats would not give Reid the support to do that, and so he didn't do it.
But let's go back, though, to I mean, obviously our Ira Shapiro, our sort of ideas or understanding of the filibuster probably in many ways started with that movie, Mr. Smith Comes to Washington.
Yeah.
But it used to work that way. And it's only because that in the recent years, the Republicans have just resorted to it at every level. So instead of a majority rule in the United States Senate, you have to have a supermajority to get anything passed. That is new. That is different. So what was wrong with the old system before the Republicans usurped their power?
Well, the old system worked, as far as I'm concerned, well. It protected minority rights, but filibusters were real and they were rare. And it's true that in recent years they've become routine and unreal. People don't have to filibuster. They just indicate their unhappiness with something, and they can trigger a 60-vote requirement and paralyze the place. I think it's an unacceptable situation. But I also think that many of the senators, Democratic and Republican, actually hate what the Senate has become. I think that what Senator Reid was trying to balance was the desire to make changes and yet to do it in a bipartisan way that allows for the possibility that progress will go forward when we start talking about immigration reform, when we start talking about further fiscal steps, gun control. Having a fight over the filibuster and trying to impose new rules by majority vote would literally have blown the place apart.
So what you're telling us then, Ira Shapiro, is that a sort of backroom deal was made that, look, we need to get some stuff passed, and let's, you know, have a little bit of cooperation on what we can achieve. But if you go ahead and go to the nuclear option, then we're not going to achieve anything. Is that?
Well, I think that's true, but I don't want to make it sound, I mean, a backroom deal. It was a deal that was made by people who were talking to each other a lot, Democrats and Republicans. Some of the people who were involved in this deal were some of the leading liberal Democrats in the Senate, particularly Carl Levin, Chuck Schumer, Ben Cardin. These are people who are genuine liberals or progressives, but also believe that the only way you can get the Senate to work better is to accomplish things in a bipartisan way. I know it's difficult because the Republican move to the right over the years, the last few years, has been so severe that it's been very hard to get any kind of cooperation. But I think the elections had an effect on that. And so are the polls, where the Republicans recognize that they're being blamed for the obstruction in the country. So I think that I'm more optimistic about the Senate than many of the people who were very discouraged by its record and by this limited filibuster reform.
Again, I'm speaking with Ira Shapiro, who spent 12 years in the United States Senators Council to the Majority Leader. He's the author of The Last Great Senate, Courage and Statesmanship in Times of Crisis. Well, not only did the liberal senators that you mentioned on the Democratic side not support the talking filibuster reform from Merkley and Udall, the two California women, Feinstein and Boxer, and Patrick Leahy weren't on board. So it's a little mystifying. Again, I go back to the question of before the Republicans usurped the power of the filibuster and started to do it for every bill that came by, as opposed to what went on for 200 years prior to that. Why can't we go back to the status quo ante before the Republicans usurped it? I mean, what's the difference between what Merkley and Udall wanted and what used to happen?
Well, what used to happen was a certain amount of restraint on filibusters, but there was no rule that required the talking filibuster. That was just the practice that was followed. My guess is that the senators believe that we will see a decreasing use of the filibusters and the tactics that we've seen in the last 2 years. Now, Reid and McConnell have said that they intend to force people who want to filibuster or exert individual holds to come to the floor and explain themselves. They said that was part, an understanding on this was part of the deal. Now, one can be skeptical a little bit about that because they said something like it 2 years ago. And so I understand why Senators Merkley and Udall and others who support them would be skeptical. But I do think that the atmosphere has significantly changed. There is a, not just the election results, but a deep-seated frustration by many senators on both sides with the way the Senate is working.
Well, I'm actually skeptical as to whether a deal by Reid and McConnell could ever restrain a zealot like Senator Rand Paul, the Libertarian, who has extremely didactic views. And he's done a lot of holes already. Unless you have a rule to stop him, I mean, do you think he's going to listen to McConnell?
Well, they don't get along, and they're even from the same state. So we'll see. I find that, to some extent, the leader and the support he has in his caucus puts a lot of pressure on people. In the past, McConnell, the last 4 years, used that pressure to pressure Susan Collins and Olympia Snowe and others to get on with his program. But I think that to the extent that he is leaning on people not to use individual holds and filibusters, I think it will have some effect. Look, the truth is, I would have gone further. I don't actually believe that individuals ought to be able to obstruct the Senate. I believe they ought to be able to have their say, but not obstruct things indefinitely. But I think we'll have to see how this plays out.
Well, not only obstruct things indefinitely, but also be able to obstruct things secretly.
Well, I think that part of what Reid and McConnell have said is that isn't going to happen. We'll put them to the test. Let's see if it happens that way.
So do you think then that there's anything that's going to happen that's going to clear the enormous backlog of appointments and particularly judicial appointments because they've been filibustered? This D.C. Circuit Court ruling foreclosing the president's option to get around the very roadblocks that the Republicans in the Senate have placed adds to my sense that our democracy is off the rails. So what do you think in terms of this deal? Are we going to see more Democratic judges, even moderate ones, which apparently is all that they put up nowadays, get a hearing?
I think that we will see more judges and more rapid consideration of judicial and executive nominations. I do think that the president needs to make, as you and I have discussed, I think the president needs to make this a priority. I don't think he pressed hard enough in the first term for having his judicial nominations considered as rapidly as previous presidents, and I think he has to make that a priority.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Ira Shapiro.
Yeah, I hate sometimes to disappoint anyone by not being as pessimistic as, but I genuinely believe that the Senate has hit bottom and I think is poised to come back.
Well, I hope you're right, and I thank you. Ira Shapiro, again,
we'll check on it in a few months.
Okay. Ira Shapiro, an international trade lawyer in Washington, D.C., spent 12 years in the United States Senate as counsel to the majority leader and in other senior positions. He is the author of a new book, The Last Great Senate, Courage and Statesmanship in Times of Crisis. We're going to take a brief station break and back talking about the UN's efforts to look into the use of drones and create a legal framework for their use.